Hello, you're tuned to the Truth Channel. It's the 3rd of November 2010. Welcome to another episode of Truth News Radio Australia. Broadcasting out in the blogosphere and the podosphere from www.truthnews.com.au. I've got a fantastic interview coming up in about 20 minutes with a lady who's written a book which addresses some of the problems affecting our society in Australia. Really, quite an all-encompassing book. I've been having a look at it today. It only arrived in the mail today, so I haven't had a chance to examine it in depth, but I really think this person is on the right track. Her name is Rachel Ems, and the book is called Aussies Wanna Kiss. That's K-I-S-S for Keep It Simple, Stupid. But the book is not stupid at all, and really look forward to talking about that with Rachel when she comes on. Now, in the meantime, I'm going to be bringing some news stories to you from our feed, so please stand by. I want to start with a story from New York, and it's related to the We Are Change organization, which is a group that, you know, I feel a strong affinity with, and having kind of been involved in establishing a We Are Change chapter here in Sydney, you know, I feel an affinity with what these people do. And of course, you know, a big part of the WeAreChange.org organization is trying to bring awareness to 9/11, the unanswered questions, the need for a new investigation, and the evidence that it was some kind of inside job. And the people who represent that organization are all over the world, and they have a way of confronting people in the media, politicians, business people, with you know, simple facts, and they're generally pretty polite. And the latest skirmish in this sort of information battle has been with John Stewart. And I've got an article here which was published at WeAreChange.org, and the title is John Stewart's executive producer arrested for assaulting a 9/11 activist. Now, I'll just read to you here some of the article by Matt Meyer from We Are Change New York. It has been remarked that all the world loves a clown. Thinking back to Stephen King's Pennywise or John Wayne Gacy's Pogo, that might be debatable. But it is probably at least true that most people enjoy some form of well-crafted humour or good satire. With that in mind, many people may scratch their heads, wondering why comedic talk show host Jon Stewart would be the recipient of serious questions regarding his stance on the events of September 11, 2001. Those same people may also scratch their heads, wondering how, or even become angry at the suggestion that Jon Stewart's Daily Show is simply another layer of misinformation laid out by the corporatocracy to be mindlessly absorbed by the zombified moderate liberal segment of the well-trained population. The theses submitted for your approval here are that 1. Jon Stewart is a well-entrenched member of the establishment's mainstream media propaganda machine. 2. The people putting on the rally to restore sanity are the complete antithesis of what they claim to be, peaceful moderates who would rather talk things out and listen to the ideas of others. And 3. The Daily Show actually employs angry, sometimes violent, anti-American radicals and globalists who peddle the real conspiracy theories concerning US domestic and foreign policy, geopolitics, and science. Their conspiracy theories are then given a humorous spin and represented by funny pictures or captions on The Daily Show. These funny graphics are then placed next to Jon Stewart's face so he can proceed to mug, smirk, and feign outrage, ultimately resulting in applause and laughter from his obedient audience. But in the end, it's not real news, it's not fake news, it's propaganda peppered with jokes. 1 month ago, I was punched in the face by the executive producer of The Daily Show. I also had my camera damaged by another Daily Show writer and had my shirt torn by Jon Stewart's security guard. Jon Stewart and the writers and staff of The Daily Show were appearing at a popular bookstore in Manhattan to present and sign copies of their new book of humorous pictures and captions. Now, it's a great article. I'll leave it there, but you can find that on our notes. The man concerned, and there's a video that accompanies the article, and you can see him being quite aggressively harassed by the people around Jon Stewart, and also, you know, just the derision and the sarcasm when he poses his question to Jon Stewart about Building 7 and September 11. And look, it's just so out of place, folks. I mean, you know, Jon Stewart is a comedian, fine, good, and, you know, he satirizes things that are worthy of satire, great. Is the 9/11 truth movement worthy of satire? I don't think so. I mean, by lumping in the 9/11 truth movement with, you know, extremist right-wing nutbags or people who represents some kind of fringe element in society, Jon Stewart is just lying, and he appears to be lying in the service of the power that resides in the corporate media. And of course, he's done some good things. You know, I've recommended his show. I've played segments of his show on my show here, and said, you know, great guy. And so, you know, it's not a black and white type situation. But unfortunately, I do have to reluctantly now admit that that he stepped over the line, and he's outed himself really as being a propagandist for the oligarchy. Let's just call them the oligarchy. You know, the cabal who monitors, filters information, allows certain things through, creates sort of engineers the left-right debacle. And of course, Jon Stewart is deeply entwined in all of that now with this rally in Washington. I think it's called a rally for sanity or something like that, that he's actually leading, and it's supposedly a rally of moderates to oppose the extremist so-called elements that are now dominant. But of course, who are they? Well, it's the Tea Party movement, which started off as just ordinary people who were fed up with being lied to and a tyranny and all the things that that ordinary, decent people should stand up for. But then somehow that all got rolled up into some concept that they're an extremist group now, and then we had people who are either sort of mentally retarded or clearly liars, like Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck, representing those groups, and increasingly projecting a negative spin, and a spin that people of a left-leaning disposition, you know, who've grown up, you know, with ideals that sort of evolved out of the 60s and 70s, will immediately, you know, take offence to. And you know, those people are being manipulated, just as the right-wing people are being manipulated to join in with these types of movements. Personally, I don't use the right or left as a label. I let other people use it, and I understand that other people use it. And I even, you know, I recognize that other people identify themselves that way. When I see people doing that, I just feel sorry for them, basically, because I think, well, you've been manipulated. You've been you're trying to find some sort of tribe to belong to. Just it's a human nature to look for a tribe, and you think that you're gonna find comfort from being, you know, part of the progressive left or the, you know, the conservative right, and it's a phony tribe. It's like Coke versus Pepsi. I know that's hard for a lot of people to actually accept, and many people are sucked into this, and many people have spent years being groomed into this way of thinking. And again, I feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for the fact that they're stuck in that mode. And this show, hopefully, is one voice that can start to, you know, bring some real sanity. You know, I really want to see sanity, and I want to stop seeing this phony left, phony right used to divide people. And of course, having people divided is how the rulers rule. There is no unity. We all have things in common that we should be standing up for. The left, the right, everyone. Gays, straights, single parents, workers, middle class people, even moderately rich people. Because compared to the super elites, even the moderately rich people are completely under the thumb. I mean, the super elites are on a completely quantum level difference in terms of their wealth and power. So, I mean, just to give you an example of that, I mean, we've seen all of these new extreme security measures come in for air travel, where people are being pat down. Has now the palms inward pat down has been brought in across America and probably around the world soon, where they squeeze and feel you up on every part of your body. But, you know, I don't think Rupert Murdoch gets the pat down. I don't think Barack Obama does. Admittedly, they're flying in their own jets, of course. That can help. You know, that does help, doesn't it, if you can fly in your own jet. Then you don't have to go through the annoying security procedures. But of course, they're more than annoying. They're humiliating, and they reinforce the fact that you are a slave and a nobody. And everyone has to go through those. You know, doctors, lawyers. But I would still assert that there are probably a number of politicians and leading business people who, when they fly on these commercial flights, do not go through those procedures. Again, because there is a class system. There's a clear separation between the ruling class and the ruled. So let's fight on. And moving right along. Power bills must rise without a carbon tax. Yeah. Look, this is a story from the Sydney Morning Herald, and there has been a series of headline stories. I'm talking about front page, top story of the day, massive, bold headline here. They've done it now probably five times, and they're basically, they're saying a couple of things. One is, you're going to get a carbon tax, so shut up. They're also saying, if we don't bring in a carbon tax, it will be even worse financially than if we did have a carbon tax. Now, that doesn't make any sense, of course, but it seems that making sense is not something that's actually a priority in terms of the way the policies are being brought forward here. And this really has nothing to do with whether you believe in man-made global warming or not. This is just a Orwellian double twist of logic where they're basically saying that we're going to bring in a carbon tax, and if we don't, you know, the carbon tax, of course, is going to push the prices up. But then they're saying that, well, if we don't bring in a carbon tax, the prices are actually going to go up. But they're saying that it's industry saying that, so it's not, you know, it's not us, folks. It's not the government. I mean, it's not the media, heaven forbid. The media is just there, just faithfully doing their job. All they're doing is reporting the news. But, you know, the news is this. Australians will be hit with higher electricity bills if the nation fails to implement a carbon price, the head of New South Wales electricity price regulator says. Rod Sims, who is chairman of the Independent Pricing and Regulatory Tribunal, said that contrary to the coalition's cost of living attack, an efficient carbon price offers households by far the cheapest way to meet Australia's greenhouse gas reduction targets. By not having a carbon price, we are going to have energy price increases anyway. Nobody will invest in coal-fired power stations, given the uncertainty about what the policy is going to be in the future. But without a carbon price, they don't have the price signal to invest in the most efficient alternative either. Okay. Well, look, you know, we don't actually have to have a carbon tax, except that it's been decided that we have to, what was it, comply with greenhouse gas reduction targets. Oh, yeah, what were they again? Well, that was just something to do with the Kyoto Treaty. I mean, that goes back a long time now. And, of course, you know, we don't have to do that. I mean, all these years, we haven't done that. Okay, there's probably been some other targets that were set as a result of the Copenhagen conference. But remember, the whole plan was supposedly to bring in the emissions trading scheme. And the emissions trading scheme was opposed by the opposition. And increasingly, it's becoming clear that the masses of people think that the whole climate change thing is nonsense. I mean, we saw that poll on the Sun Herald in regard to Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth. And I'll put that on the show notes. I think I put it on the notes last week. But there was a poll, and the question was, do you think that Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, which of course is a heavily biased film about man-made climate change, do you think that should be part of the Australian school curriculum? Absolutely not, 80%. So, you know, we are supposedly the people who run the country because we are the voters. The reason why the climate change policies were taken off the books is because there was huge opposition to it. Now, we have, unfortunately, a mainstream media which acts to control the perception, the public perception of what is reality. And what they're basically saying is the reality is that we have to, meet greenhouse gas reduction targets. But we never agreed to those targets. And but then they're saying, well, you know, we've got to do it. So, and if we don't, it's actually going to be worse if we don't bring in the tax, because these other groups here, the industry, they're just going to put their prices up anyway, you see. So the general public is being played for the fools too long, and we're going to have to stop it. Now, I'm going to have to stop my rant at this point because I have my guest coming on shortly. I would love to get through some more news. We're going to do another show in a few days where we go through a big set of Australian news. But for now, I'm going to have to turn to my interview for tonight, so please bear with me. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back to Truth News, and tonight I'm bringing you an interview with a very special person who's written a really, really amazing book, which I mentioned earlier. It's called Aussies Want to Kiss. That's as in Keep It Simple Stupid. And the book is, as I said before, there's nothing stupid about it at all. It's extremely intelligent, and I've had a chance to have a quick look through today. I'm looking forward to actually reading it. I'm just going to give you a bit of information about the author, Rachel Ems. Rachel is an accomplished businesswoman. As the managing director of a major specialty franchise chain and other business activities, she has endured most positive and negative facets of business and has competed successfully with the banking industry. Due to the inequality of bargaining power between large and small business, she became proactive in establishing an association known as Victims of the State Bank of New South Wales, assisting farmers and business owners. Rachel provided submissions, published in the report Finding a Balance of Fair Trading, conducted by House of Representatives Standing Committee on Industry, Science and Technology, which resulted in amendments to banking practices being initiated. And I'd just like to welcome Rachel to the show. Rachel, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Absolutely. And look, as I said before, I have not had a chance to read the book yet, but by the looks of it, I'm just having a look at it here. I mean, it's really quite a massive book. And I'm just looking at the back here, it says, "Questions begging answers from those who have promised and failed to govern fairly, honestly, and equally. Why do governments allow Australians to suffer such hardships because of an impossible legal system and unfair trade practices? If more than 40% of bankruptcies and company liquidations are due to economic conditions, who accepts responsibility and pays restitution? Why does the Australian federal government allow companies to rip off mum and dad investors? Why does the Australian government want to charge taxes on air, which is the emissions trading scam, and water, delivering neither? Why, after 100 years, can't the state and federal governments reach an agreement on water sharing? Why do Australians tolerate false, misleading, and deceptive conduct from governments when others would be prosecuted? Why do 50% of marriages end in divorce?" Look, it appears that your book is really just looking at the malaise of our times and really trying to understand so much that's gone wrong with our society and the kind of tyrannical systems that have developed that are driving people apart. And this is kind of what we talk about on this show all the time. So I'm so thankful that you've come along with this book.
That's quite all right. I suppose the place to start at the beginning, and I should say that this book's probably taken me the best part of 10 years to research, develop, change, amend, add to. I mean, unfortunately, people have a tendency to have very short memories.
Yeah.
Today we've got all that hoo-ha about the Commonwealth Bank jacking up interest rates above the Reserve Bank.
Oh, yeah.
But now here we are. We're confronted with who deregulated the banks and where was the opposition party at the time?
Yeah.
Then who privatised our government banks and misled us with statements such as privatisation and deregulation will make the banks competitive. Well, they certainly haven't been competitive, and there's been no government that stood up to the banks. In fact, they facilitated such a miscarriage of justice. Now, you mentioned in your introduction to myself when I was established the Victims of the State Bank of New South Wales Association back in the 1990s. There were so many farmers and business owners doing it tough. We were involved with a litigation with the State Bank, my husband and I, and had been in litigation for 10 years. I went into business to support the litigation. How many farmers have tried to get to court and can't afford the battle?
Yeah.
And it was these miscarriages of justice that made me ask, why? How is it in a democracy these sort of injustices can happen? Then you go and complain to your local minister, be it local, state or federal, and the reality is they won't do a thing. They won't come back to you. They might at the best be a postman. I mean, if you've got a complaint and you go to your state minister and somebody's defrauded you, the worst or the best that you can expect is that they will write to the Minister of Police and then they'll get a letter back from them and forward it on to you. So unfortunately, our state government has become nothing more, if you're in opposition particularly, than a glorified postman. They're unable to achieve anything constructive whatsoever. But I suppose that's better than the state government, which has become nothing more than a destructive mechanism against society. I mean, 40% of all revenue that state government receives goes in their own back pockets for producing nothing.
That's extraordinary.
You know, so when you look at it and you say, well, why do 50% of marriages end up in divorce? Unfortunately, the financial pressures will wedge a husband and wife apart. I've heard of many farmers, and I'm sure you have too, who gave up the roost and committed suicide or broke up with their families. And, you know, this is all because of financial hardship in a country that should have no financial hardship whatsoever.
I think... you know, quite often they feel persecuted as well. I mean, there was a story, the really heartbreaking story from Western Australia, which I think I brought up on a show a couple of weeks ago, where it was one of these greenhouse gas abatement policies that was being enforced on a farmer that had already complied with all of the requirements for a cattle feedlot, and you know they invested over $1 million in it to get it running, and then they were told that they were producing too much greenhouse gases, and they had to shrink their business right down to some tiny amount, and of course they couldn't repay their loans, and they're now bankrupted, and they were on the point of being evicted from their homes, and one of their key people committed suicide during that whole saga. I mean that's one case I know of.
No, I'm not surprised. In fact, you'll find in the book I've cited probably about 15 cases of various farmers and various people that have had problems with their council and state government and federal government, for that matter, when it comes to land usage. I mean, you hear stories all the time these days about if you remove a tree from your backyard, you'll get $1 million fine, even though it might be ripping up your plumbing. You hear stories about if you park your dog or tie it up in front of a shop, you may get booked for parking illegally. You know, I mean, we've got bureaucracy that's run rampant to the point where, you know, these politicians have got nothing better to do than to try and justify their existence. They're coming up with new laws, new bylaws. But I suppose the gravest miscarriage of justice in this country has been the abuse of the federal or the Commonwealth Constitution of 1901. We've had 8 referendums since that 1901, and, you know, there's never any pertinent issues put to the people, but yet bills are passed that change, that become law, that get legislations are put into place. You know, you've got the Fines Act of 1996, which enables state government to penalise you, to put fines on you for any reason they want.
Right.
You've got the federal government with United Nations treaties. You know, and that's all part and parcel why we have Agenda 21, the Lima Declaration, Kyoto Protocol, all these harsh and unconscionable treaties that no person in Australia has ever had the right to say, I don't agree. I'm not voting for that because it's never been put to us. Why? Because we wouldn't go with it. So why ask if you're not going to get a positive answer?
Yeah, look, I was covering on the show just earlier that there's been a series of shocking headlines from the Sydney Morning Herald. I don't know if you're based in Sydney, but I mean, I've, you know, yesterday, the headline was "Power bills must rise without a carbon tax," and it says here, and we're supposedly to accept this. Well, like by well, we just think, well, this is the media simply reporting a fact. Well, they're saying that contrary to the coalition's cost of living attack, an efficient carbon price offers households by far the cheapest way to meet Australia's greenhouse gas reduction targets. And, well, hang on, I never agreed to those. You know, like, what do they mean? And they're saying, well, the price is going to go up if we don't have a carbon tax, and it's also going to go up if we do have a carbon tax. So you're kind of screwed either way.
Well, we're only told what suits us. I mean, we've often spun a lot of yarns from politicians. I mean, you only have to look at last week Joe Hockey jumping up and down about the banks and Wayne Swan saying that there was nothing wrong. And this week, all of a sudden, Wayne Swan, because of public opinions, changed his stance. And, I mean, what we've got is reactive politicians. We don't have proactive. Unfortunately, we're tied up in a political system that doesn't work for the people. It never worked for the people. We've got, in my mind, and I've clearly stated it in the book, what we've got is, or what we believe we have, is a democracy, a government by the people, for the people. But that's not what we have. We have government by the party, for the party. And in my mind, that's communism. And that's what we have, where government delegates or dictates what we will pay, what we will have, how much we will pay, interest rates. I mean, interest rates have never been so low in the last 70-odd years overseas, but yet we're being penalised with high interest rates.
Yeah.
There's no justification. I mean, if I borrow money from you and I lend it on to someone else, I'll make a margin.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing the Australian government need do when it comes to interest rates and regulating it is to have the ACCC mandate a maximum margin on top of cost of borrowing. That's it. Problem solved. You know, here we are all the way. The Australian banks have never, ever suffered any hardship through a world economic downturn.
Mm.
You know why? Because they've always been exorbitant with the interest rates. They've always made billions of dollars in interest. Why? Because the government allowed them to by deregulating them. Fees, charges, interest, any which way, break clauses, and that is what government has done. Again, where was the opposition party? Nowhere to be seen. Same as with legislation. When that's put into place, where was the opposition to the United Nations treaties? There was none. Where is the opposition and where is the oppositional parties jumping up and down against people losing their land rights, against 40 or in fact it's 52% of bankruptcies and liquidations are caused by harsh economic conditions, poor economic conditions.
Mm.
Well, who controls the economy?
Can I just ask, Rachel, do you see behind all this, do you see the hand of some kind of super elite, shadowy, you know, shadow government, Illuminati, you know, whatever word you want to use? I mean, do you see that there is some kind of ruling elite that's trying to engineer all this and trying to consolidate power to move us towards some sort of new totalitarian world government? Or do you see this as some sort of just organic problem in our system that is kind of like a cancer that's growing? Because I'm often torn between those two different ways of looking at it.
Well, it's funny. I've never considered myself one to believe in conspiracies or conspiracy theories. But the reality is, there is a saying, those who have the gold rule.
Yeah.
And where we're talking about the International Monetary Fund and central banks, they have the gold and they are ruling.
And can you identify any individuals in particular who are part of that ruling group?
Yes, I believe that anyone who believes themselves to be a part of an elite society or elite group,
yeah,
such as the Fabian Society,
yeah,
are heavily backed by the Fabian Society. And I believe the Labor government in particular is so entrenched that, you know, they will do what their masters tell them and we will suffer the consequences. We will be told what they want us to hear, and that's called propaganda. They could tell us anything. They could tell us that we have to go to war with Indonesia tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we would do it. You know, it's not people that cause wars, it's governments, it's politicians, for whatever reasons they have. I mean, the history books are full of various wars that were started for all sorts of reasons. I mean, in America, the Civil War itself was started because the European banks wanted control of the American monetary system. There was other reasons, of course, but that was a great reason. Now, Lincoln did not want to take the money from them, and so he went to his treasurer, and they just produced their own greenback. And why aren't we doing that here in Australia? Why are we subservient to international lenders? Because it suits the International Monetary Fund and the central banking system.
Right, right.
So is there a conspiracy? Don't like to call it that, but of course behind every organisation, behind every political party, there is a backer. Now, nobody puts money out unless they're going to have guaranteed results.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, a name, just to sort of name names, a name that often comes up is George Soros in relation to a lot of what's going on in the US at the moment. I mean, we've got philanthropic so-called people like Bill Gates. We've got the billionaires club who like to think that they can just engineer outcomes for the world based on their concepts of what a better world would be. And one central pillar of that always seems to be that they think population is the greatest threat to humanity. And I even see climate change almost taking second place now to population in some of the rhetoric, because I think
it's become a religion. Climate change, environment issues,
they're
turning into a religious proportion.
Yeah. I mean, do you see that there's an agenda here to try and depopulate our country or the world generally? I mean, do you see any particular agendas there?
No, I don't think there's an agenda at the moment.
Yeah.
I think long term they will have an agenda to depopulate the world, and it'll only be through suppression. I mean, as I say in the early stages of the book, we know better than bird life. Feed us, house us, and we will procreate. If we can't afford to feed ourselves, we certainly will not be having any more children. Now, I mean, the biggest problem that we've got in Australia is not so much population, but maintaining the culture of Australia. Now, that's something that I believe is impossible to, protect or plan for. You can't plan for a diverse population. But I think part of a world order would be to see all borders down, and that's why we're having such an influx of migrants from all over the world, to perhaps turn Australia into a great big melting pot. And I don't think it's any different in any other country. I mean, we can see that the problems that England, France, Germany are having, they believe that Germany by the year 2025 will be a Muslim country.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I don't believe anybody should really have the reins pulled on them as to how many children they should have. But I do believe it should be governed by how many children you can afford to support. I don't think it's government that has to support a man who may have four wives by their religious beliefs and have them living as single mothers while the state feeds and supports them all when he does not work. I mean, we hear stories of this sort of thing. And is it going on here? Well, you be the judge. yes, I think we do have a problem with maintaining the culture, because we have been well-educated. We like to advance ourselves. Unfortunately, we've become a society where our wants have excelled way past our needs. And because of that, we've become enslaved to our things. And we're constantly in debt. We're buying more and more things that we can really live without. And I think that in itself is a great way to make people subservient.
And of course, by creating a melting pot society as well, you break down the natural tribal allegiances that people have to protect their own best interests, because you say, well, you know, we're going to just bring all this different stuff together, and the one thing that holds it together is the state. And so the state becomes effectively the religion, It becomes the binding force that everyone has to submit to, in a sense, because the state regulates everything that we do.
Well, you've got two issues. At the moment, you've got the state, which is secular law, based on Judeo-Christian beliefs. I mean, the Commonwealth Constitution was based on the Word of God, and it served us very well. Now we're going away to secular laws, which have more influence on society, and it may be so that that's what the society wants, and perhaps we should be looking towards more social issue votes from the people rather than leaving it to politicians. I mean, for example, how is it that somebody like Tony Abbott, a failed Minister for Health, can make a decision on abortion or any other topic? These are topics that should be put to society. Now, you have a cross-section in society of various cultures, beliefs, religions, and that's great. It's healthy, and I call that true blue Australianism. To have a cross-section of people who live and work together, I think it's wonderful. But when you get people who want to live in the country and not assimilate in society, seeking their own agendas, this is where we have a breakdown, this is where we have problems, and this is where we'll have intolerance and Australians rising up against these problems. And we've seen it already. We've had a few racial outbursts.
Yeah.
But how do we overcome it? How do we maintain our culture? It's all in education. And how is the education? I mean, there's no education in the schools today where kids can learn about the Constitution, what's in it for them. There's no Charter of Rights as to what they're entitled to. And more importantly, there's no code of conduct. How is it that people can come to Australia, expect to assimilate into society from a culture that has no rules, regulations, and yet we give them none of our rules and regulations and say, well, here we have a tendency to share, to care, to work together, to be respectful. And, you know, we, unless we can spell it out, we can't expect people to just know these rules, these regulations. In fact, here we've been running a survey and a petition on the website at www.aussieswantakiss.com. There's 100% of people who participated in the survey are not happy with the political system. Believe
Fantastic.
We have far too many politicians.
Yeah.
Believe politicians should be held accountable for their misrepresentations as you would a corporate manager.
Yeah.
I was astounded. I haven't had one person who's completed the survey to say, I am happy with the political system.
Incredible.
You know, it's the same as, most people, I'd say probably 97%, believe we need a code of conduct, we need a Charter of Rights, and we need to ensure that children are taught etiquette and manners. I mean, again, how can they know etiquette? How can they know manners if they're not taught? Not everybody's taught at home. So that's when it becomes society's responsibility to teach kids while they're little in school manners, etiquette, what's expected of them when they go out into the big world. And yet here we are, we're confronted with huge problems when it comes to drug and alcohol-related violence. It's costing not just in police resources and hospital resources, but society overall is deteriorating because we don't have any leadership. I mean, it's the old, you know, the head, the tail wagging dog.
Rachel, I'm just going to take a quick break. Just going to take a really quick break, and we'll get right back into that. Thanks. Here's a little song by Nick Drake called Road.
You can take a road that takes you to the stars. No, I can take a road that sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to the show. I'm just here today with Rachel Ems, author of Aussies Want to Kiss, an amazing book which exposes and goes into a lot of detail about the kind of tyranny that we're living within. And there's a website, aussieswantokiss.com, and a petition on the website and a survey. Is that right, Rachel?
That's correct, yes.
And I urge everyone
to buy the book and over the website or from better bookstores.
Yeah.
But I should tell you that the petition ultimately is to be taken to the High Court of Australia to amend the political system. We'll be seeking a referendum supported by the petition. If people are fed up with political parties and want to see something constructive, as we've documented in the book, how government would be set up in two stages, one as the independent House of Representatives and then as the second side as the portfolios, ministries. I mean, then we're talking about people who have extensive experience in their respective portfolios, be it health or education.
Sure.
20, 30 years experience, who have long-term plans. At the moment, we're unfortunately suffering every time there's a change of government or a change of minister, we have a change of policies. You can have six ministers in 3 years or 4 years, and every time that a politician who may have been the Minister of Roads yesterday and today is the Minister of Health has to be re-educated and makes no constructive contribution to running that particular portfolio. So it's time to change that. It's time to break the noose of the party system and be people, government by the people, for the people. That's what the book is really all about.
Are you proposing changes to the fundamental Westminster system that we work within, or is it more in the area of reform?
It's a change to the Westminster system. In fact, in the book I've quoted Professor Vernon Bogdaner, who's from the Oxford University on Political Science, and he states, and I'm not reading it in front of me so it's not 100% accurate.
Sure.
He states, it is time that we seek government outside of the party system.
Okay.
And that's exactly what I'm proposing, outside of the party system, because while they have their elite little groups, it's natural survival here. You have to feed your family. You have to look after your own welfare before you will take care of anyone in your community or your country. It's natural survival. And it's the same for the party. Mm. They will have to maintain survival of the party before they think about the benefit of the people. Well, in my mind, the benefit of the people is the reason for government.
Right, right. Do you think that we can start to adapt? I mean, let's say we did have a movement here. Can we adapt the parliamentary system so that it becomes less party focused and more in independent focused, so that you
absolutely
could have a
in
lot
fact,
more?
Right. That is the focus. That is exactly what I'm looking for. In fact, before our interview, I've been looking to contact all the minor parties and all the independents from all the various electorates. I would like to get a coalition together of minor parties and independents to be ready for the next election, standing on the platform of Aussies Want to Kiss. I must say, I was delighted with the outcome of the 2010 federal election.
Sure.
Why? Because it certainly proved that people have lost favour with Liberal and Labor, and that's why we ended up with the independents holding the balance of power. Now, it's unfortunate. I mean, you've got good people, but the independents were not standing on the same platform. Had they been standing on the same platform, they would have been working in the same direction, not all over the show. Mm. What I'm offering with the book is the platform for independents or minor parties. I mean, I've heard of people in minor parties who've mortgaged their houses to support better government for Australian people, selflessly putting their houses on the line to get money to support their party. You know, it's just another party. Mm. You know, it's time that we saw above that and had trust and faith in each other individually and collectively as one nation or one
yeah.
country
yeah.
to be able to work together. Now, I mean, I've spoken with many people from, yeah, One Nation and various
yeah.
other political organisations. They're good Aussies.
Sure.
Just like you and me. We care yeah. about this country. And unfortunately, we're not looking for the survival of the party and appeasing our backers, our elite financial backers. We're only interested in the farmers, getting water to them. We're only interested in making sure that every Aussie gets a fair go, that we can grow and be fully sustainable. We can be a sustainable country that is totally self-reliant for every facet of our lives. We don't need to import produce from developing countries. We don't need the masses of things that come in here tariff-free, which makes us totally uncompetitive on a world market. We need our manufacturing industry back that we had in the 50s and 60s. We need skills. These skills are dying. They're going. You know, I mean, we used to have shoe trade. We used to have all sorts of clothing industries. We don't have any of that anymore. And now we're seeing farmers, next target. Why? Because they make more money out of mining.
Sure.
So as soon as all the mining resources are gone, what have we got left? How the hell are we going to pay for all those massive debts that Labor government has gotten us into so that we become subservient to who?
Well, you know, I can't help but see some agenda behind the extreme measures that were proposed for the Murray-Darling region based on some environmental concerns that were actually going to cause all the small farmers to be basically run out of business. And
that's right.
That is
the agenda that the farmers will pack up.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever heard of anything so ridiculous that paying farmers to leave their land, the government will pay them to leave? Well, why not put that money into
yeah.
developing their land, putting the water where it belongs? I mean, we've got such a stupid system, and we've
yeah.
got such idiot white collar workers in Canberra shuffling paper. On one hand, they're charging water licenses, and on the other hand, they're paying out welfare payments.
Mm.
You know, I mean, this is the times that we're living in. We've let bureaucracy run rampant, and we're paying the price. We wouldn't have half the taxes that we've got in this country if we took those white collar workers and put them into blue collar jobs.
Yeah. I notice that, Rachel, you don't subscribe to the left-right paradigm much in the way you talk, and
No.
And, you know, I'm very similar, you know, and on this show, I mean, I've been just basically trying to point out that it's kind of a fake dichotomy.
The only philosophy I subscribe to is being good to each other, truth, love, kindness and caring. That's the only philosophy. And that's what a government should be there to do, to ensure. I mean, here we heard today Ms. Gillard decided to give $500 million to Indonesian schools. Well, how about Australian schools?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying that we should deny, helping our neighbours, but on the same hand, why? Why are we giving $500 million to Indonesian schools when Australian schools are choking, when we don't have enough nurses in hospitals, when how many hundreds of billions are we in debt for, and she's going and offering this money? There's an agenda to it. Why? Is it buying security that Indonesia will be more cooperative with Australia? You just don't
right,
do
yeah,
that
yeah.
when you have your own troubles at home.
So true. I wonder, like, what do you have to say to people who believe in the concept of, you know, the nanny state to some extent? You know, the people who believe that the government should be there as a safety net to provide for the people. That's why we need high taxes. Now, I was brought up thinking that all that was a good thing. I was brought up to believe socialism was a good thing. I've actually only in recent years come to swing over to a more libertarian kind of view because I was shielded, I think, when I grew up from understanding what the dark side of socialism becomes, even though it was very apparent. And, you know, we had Stalin and we had, you know, Pol Pot and we've had the Chinese, you know, the Cultural Revolution. You know, there's a few examples there that have killed untold millions in the name of a collectivist you know, giant government apparatus, which was supposedly for the greater good. But it's still a very popular view, and it's very popular among what people would call themselves progressive left-wing types, who really see the government as being a good thing. And they just can't. And then when we come to them with our views, they think we're like these sort of right-wing teabaggers, right? And there's all these labels being thrown around, all these stigmas being used to.
Yeah, well, labels have a tendency to restrict us.
Indeed.
If you put a label on somebody, you tell them they're an idiot, they'll be an idiot. Tell them that they're brilliant, they're clever, they're kind, they will be exactly that. I believe that government certainly has a place, like the dog. You don't want to be wagged by the tail. You want a good, strong, wise head. You want a government to be able to provide for the best facilities for every single person in the country, with a hand up, not a hand out. When you get Centrelink payments because you're unemployed, that's a hand out. That's not a hand up. You know, I mean, I've advocated in the book, migrants legally coming here, they should be given a home. They should be given a job with a mortgage. They should be given free education, free medical, as every Australian is entitled to.
Sure.
We've got 1% vacancy factor at the moment for rental accommodation. Where are you supposed to live if you can't afford a mortgage? When and if you can afford a mortgage, you're paying 9% to superannuation to worry about your old age when you can't make it from day to day today.
Mm.
You know, so, I mean, a nanny state. My father came here in 51, and he couldn't speak the language on a Wednesday, and by the Monday morning, he was down at Central Railway cleaning trains.
Yeah.
From that, he got a driver's license, he drove a taxi, he built a life for him and my mother and six of us, six kids. He certainly contributed to society. He never learnt to read properly because he was too busy working, but he contributed, he helped people constantly. He passed away a few months ago, which has been a great loss, but he's taught me the value of an honest day's work for an honest day's pay.
Mm.
And there is honest work, but not if we're outsourcing it overseas, be it manufacturing or call centres or anything else. You know, I mean, there's enough opportunities here in Australia. People in country towns would be delighted if we could set up call centres there. They'd be prepared to work a bit for less. And why shouldn't they? Better than nothing, or better than collecting a handout. You know, so,
indeed.
I mean, we've had the wrong people making the decisions for us for far too long. I mean, you know yourself, you know, high school kids, they finish their HSC, they go off to uni, learn political science. As soon as they've finished that, they're woofed off into a political world. They've had no life experience. A few years down the track, they become a politician. What have they got to bring to the table? What life experience? What business experience? Nothing.
Well, we
Nothing.
Had one,
and these are the people that are running this country.
We had one MP in the last election who was 20 years old. Literally, a 20-year-old won a seat up in Queensland somewhere. And, I mean, like, he seemed like a nice guy, but, I mean, he's a kid. Like, he can't and I was really quite shocked to see that they would let that happen. You know, it's obviously engineered.
That's a sign of the times. People are sick of Liberal, they're sick of Labor. Everybody's aware that, and I know the farmers are. I went to a rally with the farmers in Martin Place, earlier this year. There was over 600 farmers. It wasn't even broadcast on the media. Nobody was even told about it, how
really?
They were jumping up and down about the environmental issues.
Yeah.
You know, but the farmers are well aware that the Greens, as they call them, I'd never heard the expression, green on the outside and red on the inside.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But people would rather vote for a 20-year-old kid than vote for what else is on the table.
Yeah.
And that's why I believe that if the people like the platform of the book, and I don't say it's 100% perfect, I'm only one head. Yeah, it's taken me years to put it together. Needs a few more heads in there to say, well, yeah, that's a good point. Let's clean that up and let's instigate that. But at least it's a solid platform for caring and sharing and consideration for every single Australian first. As I say, my objective is a fully sustainable Australia. environmental issues we can handle ourselves. We don't need to be dictated to under United Nations treaties for fear of huge billion-dollar fines for non-conforming. Now, I mean, you know, you can look at all the statistics that you like in regard to emissions reductions. And we all know that carbon is the greatest fertilizer this world has.
Yeah.
If we wouldn't have chopped down so many rainforests, we wouldn't have such a problem today. All right, so it means we have to get more proactive with agriculture and green energy, but we don't need to be dictated to by United Nations, which only has perhaps a few of its members subscribing to. China won't subscribe to it, so why the hell are we?
Well, one thing that just blows my mind, Rachel, is that with all the talk and all the rhetoric about green energy and more efficient, you know, management of energy, I don't see any serious effort to improve the public transport gridlock that we have in Sydney, where you've got just thousands of buses clogging up the roads in the most incredibly inefficient way that's just incredibly wasteful. And I don't see any plan to deal with it. I mean, I actually walk into the city every day, and I've noticed.
Harewood, who's making these decisions? I mean, with great respect to the very nice person Christina Keneally really is, what expertise does she have, or any of her ministers, to determine what should be and shouldn't be done to improve this situation? I know that there's a chap, Kevin Mitchell, from One Nation, and he is so proactive when it comes to the ethanol industry, and he believes that we can be totally environmentally friendly, producing ethanol, but through the farmers and not the multinational corporations.
Right.
He is passionate that the farmers get behind it. They can make squillions of dollars for Australia for themselves. This is what we want. And I've never seen a mean farmer yet. They're making squillions. They'll be happy to put it back into the country to improve all sorts of facilities. We need our own bank again. You know, the Commonwealth Bank, $5.8 billion in profit.
Yeah.
Why isn't that back into infrastructure, into Australia, not off for, into the shareholders' pockets for them to pay more tax back to the government? That's what it's all about. Higher interest equals higher tax.
Absolutely. You know, what is your position on taxation generally? I mean, do you...
That's a good one. We need three taxes and nothing more.
Right.
It's in the book, but clear as mud. Firstly, you have income tax should be scaled, same as company tax, scaled, be it you're a miner or be it you're a plumber, you're scaled. I think that's $20,000 tax-free threshold. When you get to $100,000, you might be paying, I can't remember the exact figures, I did research it quite well, but it's scaled. The second tax would be an expenditure tax. Doing away with the GST, replaced with an expenditure tax on the end user only, which means the manufacturer, the wholesaler, and everyone down the line does not have to have their debit credit system taking so much time. The government would actually make more money by having an expenditure tax at 10% to the end user only, and we are all end users.
Right.
The procedure would be simple. But the third tax is the one I think is the most important, and that's on tariffs, the tariff tax on anything that's imported. So instead of inflating interest on home loans and penalising home buyers, if you want a Panasonic TV or you want an expensive imported car, you pay the tariff. You've got the money, you pay the tax.
Right.
You can't afford it. At least you can afford the mortgage over your head. Same as super, as I mentioned a little earlier. 9%. Now, if that were to go straight into your home mortgage, your house would be paid off quicker, taking an awful lot of financial pressure off you. You'd be able to then look at other investments that by the time you retire, you'll be self-funded.
Well, you know,
Instead of everyone getting commission on your income.
Superannuation to me appears to be... have been designed, and I mean, I've got a pretty cynical view of it. Okay, but it appears to me to be designed to keep people to actually funnel a whole lot of money into a share market which a bubble was created because of that. And it was only
$3 trillion.
Yeah. I mean, it was only mandated in 1991. So somehow we survived without it right up till then. Now, so all of this money is basically forcefully taken from people, because most people, you know, just don't have the ability to manage their own super funds, even though it's technically possible. They're just not going to practically be able to do it. So, but they have to pay super. So it's all just going to come, it just comes out of your wage. You don't have any say in it. And of course, they invested in all kinds of crazy things. And as we've seen, a lot of people have lost their life savings.
Like subprime loans.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then derivative markets.
Wouldn't it make more sense to put it into your own mortgage to help people? I mean, they've had all these schemes, reduced stamp duty to help first home buyers. Why not allow them to put their 9% super into their mortgage so that it's, one, they can afford the mortgage.
Yeah.
Two, often the banks won't look at them because they don't have enough income to support a mortgage, but yet that 9% can make the crucial difference. And not everybody has to live in major cities. I mean, there's great little towns that if the infrastructure and the industry was there, people would love to live there and have good quality of life. And instead of $500,000 mortgage in Sydney or Melbourne, you can move to a country area and have a mortgage of $150,000 and still have a lovely home.
Yeah,
and that's what's wrong with it. And, you know, to be taking superannuation that people may not see any benefit whatsoever for 40 years, and then at that time won't be enough to see them out till they're 85, 90 years old, that they'll end up on a pension. Far better to help people, you know, and this is part of the caring and sharing of society, where people can be shown how to invest their money into their home. Where people can ring up and say, hey, look, I've just about paid off my mortgage and we're 45 years old and we've got another 20-odd years to retirement. How can we develop more equity that when we retire we've got a nice, comfortable nest egg? This is the caring, sharing government that you need. Same as bankruptcy. Very, very important issue because, as I said, 50-odd percent is poor economic conditions have caused bankruptcies and liquidations.
Mm.
Yet the person who goes bankrupt for no doing of their own due to poor economy are persecuted. I mean, you only have to look at, 3 years bankruptcy and how hard it is to get going. And was it their crime? Wasn't their crime that it was a poor economy?
Yeah.
There's fairer ways, and this is what government should be doing. Fairer ways to make life better for people. I mean, if somebody's been a fraudster or done things totally illegally, we'll throw the book at them. And that's another thing. We don't have tight enough laws. Our sentencing is ridiculous. You know, I mean, how many people have walked out of courtrooms crying because the sentence has been more in favour of the criminal than the victim?
Yeah.
You know, so this is society gone wild. You know, too many white-collar workers.
And, you know, the biggest problem of all is that people aren't thinking. They're not doing the minimum amount of thinking, let alone becoming activists and trying to make a change. They've just got their heads down and they're watching TV and they're, you know, and a lot of them are just trying to survive and take care of their families and do all the right things. And I'm, you know, I totally understand that, but really, the culture has to move towards, I think, more of a sense of responsibility. I mean, you're very supportive of the Australian culture in your book. I can see, you know, you've got a lot of positive things to say about it, which is good. I tend to be a bit more critical, but it's not the Australian. I see it all over the world. I see it in every country that's part of this globalized system where we've been turned into dumbed down, junk food eating, television watching consumers. I mean, that's the way that's what they project onto us. That's the way they're treating us.
Peter Debnam said to me himself, where I've got the warning on the book, this book is politically incorrect, only suitable for those with common sense.
Yeah.
And he said, that should be the title of the book. He says, unfortunately, most Australians don't care about politics. And it's true, because by the time you've done your 40-odd hours a week and traveling backwards and forwards and try to keep a home life, you're too tired. It's enough just to flop down, watch TV.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people don't and that is also, as I say, greatly attributed to people's wants over their needs. If they said, well, hang on, let's have more quality of life, let's have more time to study and learn together, take up hobbies, interests, let's look into the political system. You know, I mean, we've become far too trusting, far too reliant on, be it Liberal or Labor. I mean, gosh, as a kid, I didn't know that there was anything other than Liberal or Labor.
Yeah,
never heard of
yeah.
them.
Yeah, they just give you that monolithic system.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And today, well, there's the independent movement, which I think's great. And I would dearly love to see the end of the party system. And as I say, I'm wanting to pull together a coalition of independents and minor parties, because unless we do that, you've got Liberal and Labor will be laughing on forever, because people will be, you know, putting all their resources into their little parties and themselves to try and get elected, but they're not standing on a unified platform. And even Liberal and Labor don't have a unified platform. All the bickering that goes on in their back rooms and everything, we all hear bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the whole, you know, Gillard Rudd fiasco, I mean, was it planned? Or was he just caught out for running his little Ollie archery, which is totally against the democracy that we're supposed to be living in?
And of course, the most galling thing for a lot of our listeners is the way these leaders appear to be corrupted, to the extent that they will say 2 + 2 = 5 if it suits their agenda. And that's, you know, climate change to me seems to be one of those cases where they're just saying 2 + 2 = 5, you know, or might be next week it might be 4, you know, and next week it might be 6. It'll just be whatever we say it is, because it's for your own good. Now just shut up.
And we're supposed to believe them because they are the politicians, and we have to take their word as if it is the gospel.
Yeah.
And that is what I think people are waking up and saying, no, enough is enough. This is my country. I care about my people, and I'm not prepared to accept this gobbledygook from these people who have no moral fibre. They have no commitment to the Australian people before their commitment to their party. Their party will always reign supreme because of the backing of the backers, and they're not doers. They're not achievers on their own steam. I mean, when somebody gets up there, like, I mean, you have to laugh at him. What's his name? Bob Catter.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's the salt of the land.
Yeah.
His blood's worth bottling. Might be a bit of a loose cannon sometimes, and he might come up with a bit of dribble.
Yeah.
But hey, no one's perfect, but he's got his heart in the right place, and he cares about the farmer. And without the farmer, we've got nothing.
Yeah. No, it's we need the independence, and we need this coalition. I mean, really hope this can happen. And we've had a couple of discussions on this show about forming some sort of coalition. Let's hope anyone listening out there who's interested, please visit AussiesWantToKiss.com. Please leave us a message as well. And we've got a lot of pretty smart people listening to this show, people with the ability to contribute really positively to this type of coalition. And we've had the Climate Skeptics representatives on here several times, and I really respect what they're doing. And the Australian Sovereignty Party has come on. We've had a few different independent-minded people bringing their views together. But we can always, you know, we can use more, and we need the discussion. And I just want to see it happen. You know, my job, I feel, is to bring the information to people, and I'm not actually trying to promote a political solution, or, you know, a paradigm or a model. I'm quite happy just to basically say, here's what I believe to be the truth about any fact, any situation, any topic, because there's been so many lies told about so many topics. And once we can clear that away and see what the realities are, I just think that that's my contribution, if you know what I mean.
No, you're absolutely right. And the thing is, like you say, we've been told too many lies. And if you were living in the corporate world, you would probably be charged with false, misleading, and deceptive conduct. Now, my question is, why aren't politicians?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, you know, and I'd love to hear from anybody who would like to join this coalition. They can write to me at info@aussieswantakiss.com. And now that the book is out, and I would look forward to marketing it and happy to come out for signings if people want me to talk further on it. And love to see people and different parties join this coalition because, you know, you have new parties, people passionate, starting all the time. The requirements for the electoral office are pretty hefty, and once they get past that, the work really starts. And they don't need to have the heartbreak of all that work to for minimal results. We're there,
so true.
We're there for everybody, as you are, as I am. We're there for every Australian, and what we need is a government by the people, for the people. And that's what this is really all about. And believe me, I'm going to push this petition to the High Court. And there's people behind me who want to see that happen too, where we can change this political system through a referendum to have a transparent government to provide for a caring, sharing Australia with a culture that we like, that we need, that will see us into the 21st century and beyond. And once we're self-sustaining, we're able to help other third world or developing countries grow. But we can't do that if we're going to take a slide or a hit for somebody else to be able to prosper. That just won't work.
Superb. Rachel, we'll have to wind it up. AussiesWantToKiss.com. Really recommend the website. Get the book. Go to the website, order the book, do the survey, please, and sign the petition if you think it's worthwhile. I do. Rachel, it's been an honour.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'd love to hear from your listeners. I'd love to come on again. If there's any specific topic you want me to talk about, I'd love to have a chat with you.
We'll do that for sure.
I'll keep you posted how we're going with the numbers on the survey and on the petition.
Great, great.
And as I say, any information, anyone's welcome to write to me at the website.
Superb. Thanks so much, Rachel.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. There we have it. A really interesting interview. I'm so glad we did that tonight. I think Rachel is really making a difference to the world. And you know, I can just tell when I looked at that book, when I heard her speak, you know, this is the direction. I'm not saying it's the answer, but it's the direction we need to be moving in. Of course, you need more voices. You need more people coming forward, and you know, putting their heart and soul into just trying to come up with some solutions. Because we do have a lot of people, I find, who become quite despairing about a situation. And even though they know a lot of the information that we provide, they don't feel that they can do anything. And that's not the case. So, look, I've got some really good shows coming up. But we're going to do some really in-depth stuff on the Australian landscape of what's happening at the moment. I'll have Josh back on. And that'll probably be next week's show, but I look forward to speaking to you again then. And please leave some comments and questions if you have any for Rachel on our show notes. And we look forward to staying in touch. So that's us for tonight. Good night from Radio Australia, Truth News Radio Australia. Over and out.